Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Radio Netherlands, Europe's untamed radio station.
Media Network, Radio Netherlands Weekly Communications Review with Jonathan Marks.
And as they say at the start of all good magazine programmes, hello, what terrible weather we're having. Good for staying inside and listening to the wireless. Callers to our answer line, Hilversum 724222, have been doing just that.
Hello, Jonathan. Tony Barrett down in the very blustery and wet and windy southwest of England. Your remarks about the poor propagation stopping any listening of events going on over in the Florida area where the hurricane hit. You might like to know that I picked up the United Nations Radio Readiness Net, run by callsign Kilo 4 Victor Uniform Delta, on 14268 kHz upper sideband. Very good signal. That was at around 22:30 on Monday night UTC. Although his signal came in well, other people on the same frequency were difficult to hear.
Well, thanks for the feedback. Interesting to note how news can be managed by the media, depending on where it's happening. We had major coverage of the hurricane which hit the United States last week, but little or nothing's been mentioned on domestic media here in Europe about Typhoon Omar, which hit Guam last Friday, destroying 2,000 houses and causing some $300 million worth of damage. Power has been restored to about a quarter of the population, but clearly it managed to spare the two shortwave religious broadcasters on the island, KTWR, owned by Trans World Radio, and KSDA, owned by the Seventh-day Adventists. Arthur Cushion in New Zealand has been checking the details for us.
It seems all transmitters are still in operation. At 10:00 last evening, I checked the following and found KTWR on 11665 in Mandarin, KSDA on 11855 in Mandarin, and KSDA on the 9530 in Russian. It would appear that all transmitters are operating and that the hurricane hasn't damaged the shortwave transmitters on Guam.
Thank you, Arthur. John Pettigrew in Liverpool, England, phoned with the news that the Classic FM national network is to open in Britain at 05 hours UTC next Monday, the 7th of September. Commercial competition there for BBC Radio 3. More news in a little while. First, I'm going out to brave the elements. Time for some more just outside broadcasting, I suppose you could call it. This time I'm in my own garden on a blustery day. Autumn's coming early this time. Give your antenna some air, they used to say. Incidentally, that's the title of a publication from Radio Netherlands, which is now currently out of print. We're preparing something completely new for launch in November, so watch out for that. It's incredible, actually, because any talk about antennas on this programme always generates a lot of mail. I think many people forget that even the best radio can't perform well if it doesn't have a reasonable antenna attached to it. Gone are the days when you needed, let's say, 30 metres of wire hanging in the garden to get anything at all. On the other hand, put a shortwave portable anywhere near a computer, television, or a fluorescent tube, and you know the interference problems that plague shortwave reception using a simple indoor telescopic whip. There are, of course, space-saving antennas around, which are somewhere in between, I suppose. So-called active antennas, like the Dressler ARA-60 or the Datong AD-370, are designed to be mounted outdoors, away from the interference field that reaches up to 5 metres outside the walls of your house or apartment. Active antennas are usually small enough to be mounted on a balcony. They're called active because they contain a short piece of wire or rod, which doesn't deliver much in the way of signal, so an amplifier is used to boost those weak signals. That's fine as long as the amplifier inside the antenna is well designed to handle both strong and weak signals at the same time. If not, all sorts of mixing products can occur, and you simply then pick them up on the radio. For the last year, I've been experimenting with several commercial antennas to see how they measure up. The more you experiment, the more you appreciate the fact that picking out the weak signals has little to do with signal strength. Just because antenna A delivers more signal at the input terminals of the receiver than antenna B doesn't mean it'll make the signal more intelligible. It may deliver more signal, you may see a higher reading on the signal strength meter, but of course there'll be a corresponding increase in the background noise. In the last few years, the terminated, tilted, folded dipole, better known, thank goodness, as the T2FD, has got quite a bit of publicity. It's not new. In fact, it was first described by C.L. Countryman in the November 51 issue of the American amateur radio magazine QST. Recent publicity by the World Radio TV Handbook and other publications has led to a resurgence of interest amongst the hobby community. The T2FD consists of a folded dipole terminated at one end with a resistor. It's sometimes also referred to as a squashed rhombic, although the performance when compared to a full-size rhombic is in fact inferior. However, few people have the space for a proper rhombic antenna, especially right here in the heart of built-up Holland. In fact, a T2FD is quite easy to build for yourself if you want to. The only special component you need is a matching transformer. The impedance at the opposite ends of the T2FD antenna is around 500 ohms, and that means that you have to find a way to match it to the 50 ohm input of most receivers. You could try to use an open feeder or a twin lead as the feeder into the receiver inside, but in practice any nearby metal objects, especially things like guttering or window frames over there, well, they have such a detrimental effect that by the time the signal gets indoors, there's not much left. So it's much better to match the antenna to 50 ohm coaxial cable via what's called a 10-to-1 Balun transformer right at the antenna end, and then feed the signals inside to the receiver using screened coaxial cable. Our tests show that a T2FD antenna with a length of about 15 metres gives good reception between 3.5 and 25 megahertz. It receives signals coming from any direction with a constant sensitivity over the entire range, and that's important too. The Dutch company of RF Systems has experimented with the T2FD for several years now, continually improving on the design. What they've done now is to combine two antennas into one, as it were. The DX Listener, as it's called, is a 15-metre-long passive antenna, yet it comes with a simple-to-operate indoor control unit. In fact, that's used to operate RF relays, which are sealed inside the central part of the antenna, hanging outside. In fact, it's right above me. That allows you to switch the antenna so that it either operates as a T2FD in the range 3 to 30 megahertz, or if you want to, you can make it work like a long wire antenna, in which case you can extend the low frequency coverage down to about 60 kilohertz. The T2FD has made its name because it's much less susceptible to man-made interference than a long wire antenna. As a result, the noise levels are much lower between 3 and 30 megahertz, and that's very important when you live in a housing estate like me with all kinds of interference sources nearby. So I purchased a DX Listener and I've mounted it here in the garden according to the instructions. The top end is tied round the chimney and the bottom end is hooked to the top of a wooden garden shed. I've also tried other positions to see just how critical the mounting is. In fact, in order to get the best results, this antenna needs to hang at an angle of 30 degrees. So the top of the antenna needs to be around 7.5 metres higher than the bottom. This antenna comes complete. It's ready to hang. Took me about a morning to do that. And it has a very sturdy construction, which is completely water and rust-proof. The centre spacer is a white tube, which contains the relays, on the bottom which is a connector for a PL259 plug. The plug and the connector are made waterproof by using a very simple and effective mechanism. We've mentioned it before. You simply cover the plug with a silicon rubber teat used for a baby's bottle. It's important that the coaxial cable drops away vertically from the antenna for about 2 metres before bending in any direction that's required. Now, for reference, we've got an active antenna also in the garden. In this case, it's the Dressler ARA60. Here's a recording I made around midday. It's Radio Fax, broadcasting from Ireland, putting in a weak signal here in Holland, as you'd expect around that time. And we'll switch between the DX Listener in the low noise position and the ARA60.
I'll be is there too. Broadcasting on 3910, 6205 and 12255. Across Europe and around the world, we are Radio Vax. Happy to have
We're listening to 12 megahertz. Let's switch now to the Dressler. Pretty dramatic results. The atmospheric and the man-made noise just simply drops away when I switch to the passive antenna. Now let's switch to a long path signal. Here's reception of Voice of America from Botswana, their relay station there. A long distance signal, so it's arriving at a low angle here in Holland with respect to the horizon. Of course, it doesn't always happen like that. Sometimes there's little difference, especially I notice on strong signals. The DX listener performs consistently throughout the shortwave spectrum. However, it is important that you follow the mounting instructions. We tried hanging the antenna horizontally between two chimneys, but the drop in noise level then is virtually nil. Perhaps the best advantage of the antenna is the total absence of intermodulation products found on even the best active antennas. And the Dressler ARA60 isn't a bad antenna at all. Mind you, at a price of $350 in Europe, the DX Listener from RF Systems isn't cheap. A simplified, and therefore cheaper version, works out about half the price, is also available with just the T2FD performance, but that's not suitable then for reception below 3 MHz. RF Systems say they've used special heavy-duty components to completely waterproof the antenna, and of course that adds to the price. Duven Electronics in Hogeveen, the Netherlands, is the manufacturer of RF system products. EEB in Vienna, Virginia, and Universal Shortwave in Reynoldsburg, Ohio, carry the products for the United States, and Low Electronics distributes them in Britain.
Radio Netherlands, we're not number one. You are.
Bernd Erfjord tipped us off to a story that emerged this week in Oslo concerning Radio Norway International. Their new external services schedule is out for the period until March, but it appears the two broadcasts at the weekend in English may be taken off the air at the end of this year. Grundel Krausdahl is a programme producer in the English section. I asked her why they should stop now. After all, at the end of last year, there were some experiments by Radio Norway International using the powerful 1200 kilowatt medium wave station in Kvitsøy on 1314 kilohertz, intended to reach listeners abroad. Now it's cutback time instead of expansion.
I agree with you. It's been quite a surprise to us too. But let me just say that our program on medium wave just before Christmas, that was an experiment, a pilot program, and we had no definite plans of expanding or of going on to medium wave. But then this summer, we had notice from the Norwegian Foreign Office that the financial support to the English language programs would be withdrawn as from next year. And that did come as rather a shock to us.
Dette Norge. This is Radio Norway International.
But the decision may not be final if there's sufficient reaction from the audience. After all, bearing in mind the small number of transmissions in English per week from Oslo, an annual postbag of 10,000 letters is evidence that someone's listening.
We have not given up all hope, let me put it that way. We have had programs in English from Norway. In fact, since the Olympics in 1952, that was really what started regular transmissions from Radio Norway. And they have been on the air once a week on Sundays, and they were financed by the Norwegian Broadcasting Corporation. 2 years ago, we got this support from the Foreign Office, which made it possible for us to double the programs and broadcast both on Saturdays and Sundays. But the situation now in the Norwegian Broadcasting Company is quite different from what it was before. Competition is a lot stronger. The principle here is that license these should be used for Norwegian listeners and not for foreign audience. And that means that the whole question of broadcasting in foreign languages has come up.
The English programme airtime will simply be replaced with Norwegian language material, for NRK has no plans to stop its shortwave service for Norwegians living abroad. That dates back to the days when the Norwegian merchant fleet was very powerful. And it was because many of the Norwegian ships used Spanish crew members to man the vessels that a weekly news bulletin was introduced on Radio Norway International.
This is Radio Norway International.
We now continue with a news summary in Spanish.
La semana en Noruega. Boletín de noticias en castellano.
We used to have 5 minutes news in Spanish about Norway, and that again had to do with the merchant fleet, because there were many Spanish sailors on board Norwegian ships, and it was a way of informing them about the home country of their place of work.
Radio Norway International hasn't started a letter-writing campaign yet. No doubt that'll be launched this weekend. But seeing as the finance comes from the Norwegian government, and speaking personally now, I guess if you want to see Norway keep broadcasting in English, a letter to the Norwegian embassy in your country may have more effect.
Media Network. All that's happening on clandestine stations and ones that should be.
Back to Arthur Cushion in Invercargill, New Zealand now for some shortwave tuning suggestions about legal broadcasters. And I think Arthur Palau is first on the list.
Yes, Palau is verified with a card and some new details, 2200 to 0300, they're in Chinese, and 0300 to 0530, they're in English on a new channel of 11900 kilohertz. Then on Sunday, it's 0300 to 0730 in English, still on 11900 kilohertz. The other broadcast is unchanged, and that's 1100, and that one is through to 1530, and it's a 9830 kilohertz.
Now, this station in Palau is owned by High Adventure Ministries in California. They've got two other stations, haven't they? I mean, one in California itself, KVOH, and also a station in Lebanon.
Yes, they're. In fact, both of these stations are running a program at 0400 of Dr. Gene Scott. And the KVOH is on 9785. And the Wings of Hope, that's in Lebanon, they're on 11530.
I understand the weather's been affecting New Zealand too, hasn't it? It's been pretty lousy weather with you.
It has been a terrible winter. Early August, the South Island, Canterbury, under snow, a lot of sheep lost, and it's been repeated just recently again. And in the North Island, and even north of Auckland, they've had snow, which was unheard of. So it's been a devastating winter, really.
Mind you, it's been a pretty lousy winter for Radio New Zealand, isn't it, with a lot of staff cuts?
Yes, it has. The commercial staff is down to 300. Gone are the days of extra pay at weekends, 7 days a week, the same rate, and their redundancy settlement has been cut by 70%. In the national radio scene, even though things are grim, they have opened 4 new repeaters, and they're now in operation, and they are located on 729 at Tokoroa and 918 at Timaru, and then we move to 1017 from Masterton and 1188, and that's broadcasting from Rotorua.
Join us next week for more. Bye now. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.